I know I have some other meetings going on today as well, so that I kind of need to jump myself. I can't be on too long. So why don't we go ahead and get started? Once again, for public consumption, this is the subcommittee meeting, the Local Government of the Future subcommittee meeting of the Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations. This subcommittee has been working on a few different legislative initiatives this year for a proposal to the governor and the legislature on initiatives that we believe should be taken under advisement by the legislature this year. Within that context, this obviously is a Zoom meeting to which the public is invited. I would just once again ask that, the meeting is being recorded, but if to the extent that folks would like to be recognized for comment, please indicate by using either your raise hand function at the bottom of your screen, or just wave madly at the camera and I'll try to recognize you. So to recap where we are right now, and this is actually a somewhat of a, although we don't technically have the usual criteria for establishing meetings, some of which we do, I shouldn't say that, say it quite that way. But this is, I guess you'd call it a special meeting of the subcommittee, because at our regular subcommittee meeting last week, we realized we had a little bit more work to do. So we called this special meeting for this morning. Where we left things off was that last week we had received information from Fran Rabinowitz at the from CAPS about their blueprint for reimagining Connecticut. I'll just use the title: the CAPS blueprint to transform Connecticut public schools. And I think if I could summarize where we are, there are some notes that have been distributed by Bruce that covers what we discussed at the meeting last week. But I think where we left off, to kind of cut to the chase, was that the blueprint that CAPS has put together is very comprehensive and very good. However, in the interest of thinking about this in terms of what can be done this year, this legislative session, perhaps we should be narrowing down some of those recommendations so that we as a subcommittee can absorb, approve, and refer recommendations to the larger full ACIR membership at our regular meeting on Friday. And we thought it best to have a meeting, follow-up meeting this morning, with Fran's help to kind of help identify what those particular items might be for consideration by the subcommittee that we could endorse. The last little piece of this is that the other discussion I think that we had was that we all know that there are some federal funds that will be coming to Connecticut from the COVID relief act that just got through the House over this past weekend and is now at the Senate. So we expect those funds to come in, and perhaps we could, as a body, be recommending to the governor a slight change of course from the way he has been approaching those funds and their application to local school districts. And instead of that, have something that's presented to us from the CAPS blueprint that would give a direction or a redirection to the governor on how those funds could more appropriately be applied, rather than just filling in or backfilling the commitments that the state has already made and continues to be responsible for local education that were established years ago. So sorry for that long summary. I'm hoping that was clear for folks, if that helped kind of remind us of where we are and what we need to do today. I know that Lyle, our vice chair, could not join us today, but I don't know if anyone else who was on the call last week has any other anything else they'd like to add in terms of that summary to make sure that I covered everything. Okay, sorry for that rambling stream of consciousness there. So I see that Fran is with us again this morning. Thank you again, Fran, for joining us.
Of course.
And I think your task from the meeting last week was to help narrow down the recommendations from the larger blueprint to assist this body to help focus our attention on what could actually be accomplished this year, particularly using the federal funds.
Yes, and I sent Bruce a Gantt chart, which he was going to post and send to all of you, which did break it down by year, most of the recommendations. Do you have that Gantt chart?
Let's see. I received it separately.
Yes.
During the meeting last week, which I can then call up.
I also sent another one, Brendan, which you also asked me to determine where ESSER funds could be used, the federal funding. So
right.
I sent that to Bruce yesterday.
Okay, let's see. Yes. Okay, and we did get that.
And those of you who are online looking at the agenda that's online, I inserted the Gantt chart into a second version of the agenda that should have replaced the original one online. So it should be available in a couple places. If anyone does not have it, I'll find it and email it to everyone.
I'm calling up the Gantt chart as we speak, and if I could have permission to share my screen, that may be. Fran, is that a better place to start? Or
yes,
is...
I think the Gantt chart and the one that was sent yesterday is a good place to start because it gives you the priorities for 2021, but it also tells you where the ESSER funds may be used.
Okay.
But if you don't have that one, I can fill in.
I think this must have come yesterday, right? Because this is what Bruce sent to Lyle and me yesterday.
Okay, perfect.
So I think that's good. If I could just have permission to share my screen, which I apparently do.
You should see the link at the bottom.
Got it. Yes, thank you. Okay, so I'm now sharing my screen. Fran, is this what you're referring
that's
to?
That's absolutely perfect.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay.
So would you like me to take you through this?
Sure. Why don't you walk
okay.
Us?
So I thought your questions last week were excellent, and we had prepared a Gantt chart, which I had sent out to all members. We understand that this is certainly a 15-year plan, and we are not going to accomplish everything in the first year. And so we've kind of laid out a way to reach this incrementally, so to speak. What we wanted to avoid was what some legislators have already started to do, and that is cherry pick. You know, I'll take number 26, but I don't want number 14 and pull it out of the plan and put that forward. We don't think that will work. We think that what will work is the adoption of the full plan and then working through pieces of it every year. So we started with 21, and I'll take you through that. We did say that the state must spend considerably more to meet a goal that the state and towns will equally share K-12 spending. We did say that, and we would love it if the state would adopt that goal. You know, certainly it's not going to happen right now. We've been at between 39 and 41% for 30 years. Most or many states are at 50%. So we have a plan that over 15 years, the state will move to 47% on a statewide basis. The towns will move to 47%, and the feds will come in with 6%. So we're saying just adopt that goal. We know you're not going to do it immediately. We believe that the ECS predictability could be done now, which is to prohibit the governor from making mid-year changes and giving the General Assembly a May 1st deadline for setting ECS final grants in order to make it easier for the municipalities to prepare and approve their budget in time. They need to know what the ECS funding will be. We ask that here's the thing. It's a 15-year plan for the ECS funding to increase every year. Here's what we could live with. We could live with the governor continuing the formula that's in place right now. Not flat funding, but continuing the formula and holding harmless the 95 districts that were due to lose money. That would cost about $7 million. And then we're asking that they increase to 2.5% each year and look at the foundation. But frankly, I'll be honest here, with the federal funding coming in, if they continued the formula and if they agreed to hold harmless the districts losing money, we could begin the 2.5% in 2022. We'd prefer it this year, but we could defer it. What we can't live with is the flat funding of ECS. In special education, we support a two-year phase-in of excess cost grant full funding. We know that that is major to the school districts, and the 70% funding just doesn't cut it. So we're asking that begin in 21. And we are saying that certainly some of the ESSER dollars at the state level could be used for excess cost. We believe that. We also look at English language learners and say we really need to have plans for them. And we also ask for significant new state funding. Again, for English language learners, that state funding and the funding in the school districts can be used to move this forward. ESSER funding is to address learning losses, and certainly English language learners are part of that. Structural racism, again, that can begin. That's training. That is, training our staff, that's working with pre-service. It is looking at data, et cetera. Again, ESSER funds could absolutely be used for that professional development. Could also be used for the virtual learning, rethinking virtual learning by radically improving the technology, the content and the use of virtual learning. It's going to be with us, guys. And, it is, we've learned a lot and we can extend our education program by using virtual learning. We also know that this will probably not be, I hate to be negative, but it won't be the last pandemic and we need to be prepared going forward. SDE leadership, we're asking for that model curriculum. ESSER funding, again, could be used for that. You know, they have $42 million at the State Department of Education to to work with school districts. And we do believe a model curriculum, which I told you was incredibly important. It's not mandated, but it is a model. If you look at all the grant, all the bills coming through, we're looking to add Native Americans to the curriculum, study of them. Recently, Asian Americans. And it's coming in at all ends. It's somewhat fragmented. If we had a model curriculum, we could incorporate it there. And it would also save municipalities tons of dollars in developing curriculum. Student well-being. We do believe that mental health services are badly needed, and we've asked for $10 million in the blueprint for mental health services for our children. We also believe that the ESSER money at the state level and the dollars that will follow from Joe Biden can also be used for that. Disengaged youth, we are not asking for dollars there. We're just asking for municipalities, for districts to reach out to the community groups that are serving our disenfranchised youth. Frankly, I want to see more work done in preparing those kids that may not go on to a four-year college after graduation. I watched too many of them in Bridgeport leave high school without skills to continue or to enter the workforce at an entry level, and perhaps to continue in an area that they really believe is important to them. This goes along with the workforce council work as well. For example, could we find a way to micro-credential kids? Could they become proficient in the beginning levels of manufacturing or health or restaurant work? I'm not saying that they have to stay there. I'm not saying I have low standards for these kids. They want to go to four-year colleges, by all means go. But at least we would be credentialing them to begin work after high school. And we do think that that could move forward. Teacher certification doesn't cost money. It's eliminating the barriers to bringing teachers in from other places. We're also asking for $8 million, though, to increase the minority representation in teaching and in leadership. And we're looking at the CREC program and saying, let's move that out statewide. We need some state dollars for it, because while it is really good for every candidate, it costs over $60,000 to get them from the beginning of certification to the end. We're looking at regionalism, and we're saying, yes, you can use ESSER dollars here with the RESCs to assist the regional service centers and facilitating the regionalization of services, especially students with disabilities. We believe we can do better with that. We can have better cutting edge programs. Waivers. We're asking for the department, doesn't cost any money. Adopt a process for certain waivers for those districts that are showing tremendous growth in impacting the achievement gap, or just high performing districts. Maybe they don't have to do every bit of training that you're asking. Governance is incredibly important. We have 15 superintendents leaving this year. I'm not saying all are leaving because of discomfort with governance, but there are a number of them that are. And there may be some that are retiring earlier than they would have. We need a code of conduct for board members. We need a way for board members and superintendents to work together more effectively. And we also need an ability to remove a board member if they are severely violating a code of conduct that we'd like to see in place. We're saying in public school choice to maintain high quality schools of choice and look at the funding issues. And I spoke about this at length at our last meeting, the inequality, the inequity in the funding of schools of choice. This is a major, major issue. We're looking at health and safety, and we'd like health and safety audits to be done. Certainly can be done with ESSER dollars. We need audits. We need to know where schools are and are they prepared ventilation-wise, et cetera. And more research needed. Those are, we're asking for research, and I talked to you about that before, with special education, with minimal, with, you know, the cost of educating kids across the state is incredibly diverse. You've got some districts that are educating children for $14,000, and you've got some that are $38,000. We need more study into that. We need to know why that disparity exists. So that's what we were looking at in 21. I think you can, I can go further, but the other pieces, we moved on to 22 or some to 23 and some to be determined. And what we said here is, honestly, with the blueprint, we understand things are going to change, but if we had a plan that we were all working on together, we just believe it would be so much more effective than more than 200 bills that come in a fragmented way. And most of the bills that are coming up for discussion are areas that are already in the blueprint. And the other piece that we agreed to is we are very, very open to changes. I mean, adult ed is one that we said, you know, let the rest do adult ed. I know there are some legislators that really objected to that, and we're certainly willing to hear that out and make changes as we move forward. It's not all written in stone. That's part of how we move forward as a state and when we have differing views and come to an understanding. So I hope that helps in letting you know that we're not looking for everything right away.
Okay. And Fran, do you have on, I know on this chart, it doesn't seem like there is, what's the price tag for those?
Oh, for 2021?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't do that. It would depend. I mean, I don't know how you feel. It would be helpful to me. Am I on the right track to say keep the bipartisan formula in place for ECS, hold the districts harmless, and begin the 2.5% in 2022, or should I be fighting for that now?
I don't know. What's everyone's inclination?
I just wondered what you were thinking.
I'll stop sharing so I can see a little bit more of the screen if there are folks who'd like to weigh in a little bit on this.
You know, I don't want to let anybody off the hook, but I also want to be realistic.
Brian O'Connor.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the tack that you just described, I think stop the delay, you know, keep the phase in moving forward is what CCM supports. And I think, you know, the 22 funding starting the 2.5% then is probably more reasonable.
I was thinking that, Brian. What about holding, I mean, it would cost $7 million to hold the districts harmless, the 95 that are losing the money. $7 million is a drop in the bucket.
I was going to say that's nominal. You know, we've done a lot of budgets. $7 million is not bad.
No. I didn't think so. I mean, you know, and we could live with that. And, you know, we just feel like that might be a wiser way to go. But, you know, I always like to get municipalities, especially CCM's view on that.
We're actually testifying today to, to not delay and don't do the phase.
Continue
the phasing.
Good. Okay.
Or
so,
tomorrow, I should say.
Yeah, that I am testifying tomorrow also. So that is one piece. I mean, the bulk of our dollars is in the first biennial is the full funding of the excess cost, which is about $70 million. Our total ask was, I think, $78 million in the first biennial. But, you know, much of that, frankly, could be ESSER dollars, too. If you look at the mental health and you look at the EL and all of those pieces, there are ESSER dollars there to help out with getting that started.
Are you including that comment in your testimony tomorrow? How are you planning to communicate that part of it, Fran?
Well, in my testimony tomorrow, I am speaking against the governor's budget and saying, yes, I will be talking about the blueprint and talking about moving the blueprint forward as an alternative to the governor's budget.
Marcia?
Fran, I was just wondering if you could put a dollar amount to each one of these lines.
I could, Marcia. I could. Do you want me to do that verbally right now, or would you want me to send it to you?
Oh, I think if you just create another a dollar amount on each of the lines, you can send
it. I can do that, Marcia. Actually, I think I could get that done today and send it back to you.
I would appreciate seeing that as well, Fran. I think it would be helpful as we're moving forward through this session and as the RESC Alliance and as CREC, it would be helpful to see that.
Yep, I will send it to I will send it to all of you. I'll send it only for 2021, okay?
Correct.
Which is this.
Well, the biennium budget,
right.
Correct?
Yeah, right. That would be this biennium.
It seems that the total price tag for all these is quite large, and to sustain it would be as well. So, you know, I guess is my question is, how are you going to fund it over time? From existing revenues or some, are you talking about new revenues? How do we pay
Well, if you look at ECS, yes, that is quite expensive over time. I would say that would be new revenues. It's not existing. The funding of ECS at 2.5% each year is certainly going to increase. The special education, what I'm hoping for, John, I'm hoping that we pick it up this year. I hear it from districts all of the time, but I'm also working at the federal level. I'm working hard with our delegation to get them to reauthorize IDEA and to pick up excess costs. And the president has said he is moving in that direction. So that's a federal.
But I guess folks have been saying that since 75.
I know.
Seen, you know, yeah. Anything go forward. But just from the state, you know, is your group supporting, you know, changing the income tax, the sales tax? You know, and all places that no one wants to touch in the state in terms of revenue to pay for this.
And we haven't gone that far. We haven't gone there, John.
I mean, the existing pot's only so big.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be honest with you, John, we have put forward what we believe education needs, but we haven't gone to how that could be funded.
Just, you know, from a RESC perspective. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Richard.
Deborah, did you want to finish your thought? And I'll
I should say, so the CAS blueprint is addressed a lot, but from a RESC perspective, it's still lacking funding for magnet schools. And we know that it was a complicated conversation and it was difficult to infuse that, but magnet school funding is not included in the recommendation, and we need to come up with a long-term strategy to support the magnet schools because we do have a significant number of students across the state in magnet schools, both host magnets and RESC magnet schools. So we need to address that as well.
Well, Deborah, we didn't leave it out. We did we did not include them in the ECS funding formula, but we did increase by 2.5% each year their allocation. But we did not address the overall actual funding of magnets, because we felt that, I mean, much as I hate task forces, but we need to put something together, because the inequity in funding of either the RESC magnets or the host magnets or the magnets in Hartford versus New Haven is just outrageous. And we need to sit down and figure all that out before we can include them, I think, in funding, because no matter if we just threw them into the funding pot, you'd still have that gross inequity.
Mm-hmm. And we don't disagree, Fran, obviously. We've been asking to resolve that for several years as well. So if
it really needs
conversation, it's going to be needed as we move forward with the conversation about the ECS formula change.
Absolutely.
Rick.
Thanks, Brendan. Hey, I'm here on behalf of CCM2, but Brian's our official spokesperson. But I just want to say that I really think that this blueprint is well done, and it addresses a lot of issues that many of us have been concerned about over years and years. And I also personally feel that it's been assembled in a way that allows other people to see that you can do this in chunks in a way that could make sense from a policy perspective, and hopefully getting the support necessary to do it. So it's really well done. I wanted to zero in on special ed, and Brian mentioned this last week too. And Brendan, you'll remember this, when we were working together on the Governor's Transition Committee for Shared Services, one of our focuses was on special education, also transportation, school transportation. And this recommendation, Fran, also talks about state scrutiny of growing identification rates and rising costs, tuition costs for special ed placements. That's something that lots of people, including that Governor's Transition Committee, were really focused on. Has anyone attempted to try to estimate what the cost savings might be with a more careful oversight of identification rates and placements and the tuition that goes along with that?
You know, Richard, first of all, thank you for your positive comments. This has been 3 years in the making, and I don't take credit for it at all. Ted Sergi was really very instrumental in this, in moving it forward, as well as Kathy Gay. But I would say to you that no, we haven't looked at what the savings would be, but throughout this document, in several places, you will find our growing concern about the numbers, the escalation in numbers. I mean, we were at 11%. In 2011, we are now at somewhere around 17%. And guess what? I heard yesterday Hartford's budget, one third of Hartford's budget is special education. And the amount of the number of children, I believe, is around 22% of the population is now identified. Speaking as a former superintendent in Bridgeport, I would say to you that there is a great deal that we can do prior to children being identified. I believe that we're identifying children that don't need special ed. And I say that very clearly with the idea that if you need special ed, you ought to have it. But frankly, we have not worked well enough with enough resources to intervene prior to. And we've been very short-sighted in that, because I don't blame teachers. They're saying, well, there are no reading teachers. There's nobody to intervene with the child. So I'm going to get them the services they need through special ed. It is a heavy price tag. And more importantly for me as an educator, I'm not sure it's the best for every child that we're identifying. So we asked in that, I asked last year, begged the education committee actually for a committee with timelines and goals to really look at the over-identification of special ed kids, especially kids of color. I also believe that we ought to be, when we look at the excess cost, I'd like to see a larger percentage given, for example, we're 4.5 times right now. Maybe we're 3.5 times and we give more dollars to those districts that that develop programs within the district or at the local RESC, rather than sending them out to the private institutions. You have private institutions that are costing $120,000, $140,000. I don't have any hope right now, I'm just being honest here, of getting the legislature to change the burden of proof. But it's just not going to happen right now. I think it's going to happen at the federal level, not here. And, you know, I've been told that over and over again. With the burden of proof, you know, and I know that districts agree to an out-of-district placement, even though they feel that they could do as well, if not better, for the child. But the attorney fees are just astronomical. So they agree. And I do believe we can do better in that area.
Hey, Fran, just one follow-up question. You mentioned a couple minutes ago that as much as a third of Hartford's education budget goes towards special ed. Do we know what proportion or percentage of all education spending in the state goes towards special ed? And then the second follow-up is, what would it look like if we could start to institute more careful procedures for identification and more careful ways of identifying placements with cost in mind as well as quality?
You know, Richard, that's such a thoughtful question. I would say to you that, and maybe I'm being old-fashioned here, but back in 2005, I was associate commissioner, and we put together a whole system. It was a triangle of response to intervention. And what it was is a very focused process for how you intervene with kids who are not performing as they should. I do believe, not to get into the weeds on education, I do believe we need to do a better job, first of all, of teaching reading to all kids in the regular classroom. Early reading is something I, you know, hold very close and dear to my heart. And I believe many kids are identified for special ed because they're not reading successfully. So I believe that there needs to be a very focused process. It does happen in some districts, but it's sort of fallen off the radar for everyone. And I believe that we could do that. Yes, there are interventions. There are additional interventions that are needed, Richard, in some of our large districts. But I think we could find a way if we were very focused in our approach. That's number one. Number two, I just believe that we need to give the RESCs more dollars to develop regionalized programs that are cutting edge, and they don't necessarily need to be special ed. I told you, I think last time I worked with Brendan way back when in Bridgeport with the mayor to bring forward a program that would have been regional prior to being identified as special ed. You know, intense intervention for 3 weeks or 3 months working with the neighboring schools. And I'm getting into the weeds, but there are lots of things that we could do.
Thank you, Fran.
Thanks, Fran. Thanks, Rick. Other questions about strategy? Brian?
Actually, just a follow up to your last conversation with the discussion with Rick. Do you have a dollar amount on the early intervention piece?
I have a dollar amount. Well, no, I don't. Okay. I don't have a dollar amount on that. I was just thinking that I had a dollar amount on preschool, but that's not what you're asking for.
No, I'm sorry. No.
Yeah, I know what you're asking. Yeah, I know what you're asking for. And I know that, for example, I remember in Bridgeport, it wasn't that long ago, this regional program would have cost about $2 million to start, but it would have paid off moving forward big time.
Okay, thank you.
Leah?
Sorry, hi. I would just reiterate Kathy's discussion last week surrounding funding, whether or not ESSER can be used or is a good source, especially for districts that aren't receiving a lot of ESSER funding, as well as maybe tying any increased funding to outcomes instead of just providing funding and hoping for the best, tie it to outcomes as well. I'm not sure how what the vote on this will be as far as like approving the whole thing to go to the ACIR committee itself. I'm not sure exactly how Kathy would envision us voting on that as far as.
Yeah, well, what I'm envisioning is that we'll, as a subcommittee, having received some of this follow-up information from Fran, that we will vote to make a recommendation to the full body to adopt those recommendations that Fran has offered to us. And I think with a more, generally we're supportive of the blueprint, I guess, would be part of it, but really primarily for Friday's meeting, we would be recommending a more narrowly tailored approach of the blueprint to the governor as far as reimagining how he could be doing the budget so that he's maintaining the previous commitments that the state has already made to local education, but then adopt those recommendations Fran's offered here for a 2021 implementation, and leveraging ESSER funding to help make that happen. So we're prioritizing ESSER-related funding that we know is coming to the governor so that he's not – so that we're not backfilling, as I said earlier, not backfilling previous obligations that the state has already made with federal money, but rather keeping our state level funding and keeping that promise going forward and using ESSER to implement a lot of the recommendations from the blueprint that Fran has narrowed for us. That's a long motion to vote on, I guess. Maybe someone can say that a little more succinctly than I did.
Right. And I think probably the cost associated with each recommendation would be very helpful. And
I will get that to you as soon as I can, Leah. And you are right. In the blueprint, we do ask for accountability. We do ask for public meetings on accountability at the district and state level on how the funds have impacted what they're intended to impact. And we've asked for those yearly.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions for Fran or comments or thoughts? John?
I don't know if we did the, as part of the local government of the future piece and the restructuring of the regional performance incentive program, which is now our proposal is to go through, would limit those funds to the COGS and the RESCs if there could or should there be some linkage in that to the blueprint to give some weight to the usage of the RPIP for the RESCs for pursuing regional initiatives. Maybe that's too specific. I haven't really thought it through, so I'm just thinking on the fly here, but we do have that and a line of funding that is out there.
My only reaction to that personally is just that I'm interested in what other folks might be thinking. That in some ways, I'd hate to have the RPIP reallocation and reconfiguration get too wound up in the CAPS blueprint proposal, because, you know, we're not just talking about educational outcomes in the RPIP funding. We're talking about a lot of other kind of nuts and bolts things, like, you know, backroom accounting operations and transportation opportunities and other things like that that aren't necessarily about educational outcomes. So if we included the RPIP stuff in a lot of the things that Fran's talking about, we might wind up, you know, sucking away a lot of dollars from the kind of administrative tasks that we were hoping COGS and RESCs could pick up more of. Is that a fair assumption or statement?
I think that's I was just kind of talking off the cuff, which is never a good thing. So.
Well, you know, I mean,
I would agree with what you were just.
There's clearly linkage between what we are doing with the RPIP funding and what Fran's trying to do as well. There's certainly, you know, a connection there.
I guess my other concern, you know, on the funding pieces, at some point there is a large number to this and it's long term, and broaching that issue of on the revenue side, because if it's not, one of my concerns is that the unintended consequences, some of these very well thought out and well-intended programs drop back on the property tax. And that I would, you know, for the towns that I work for, would really not want to see, however well-intended or how good the programs are, because that just perpetuates a bad system we have. And I know folks don't want to talk about the income tax or other revenues, but at some point we have to as a state.
Right. Yep, agreed. Thanks, John. Other thoughts or comments? It sounds as though where we are right now is, I think several folks have, including myself, have asked Fran for numbers to accompany the prioritized listing of items that we would consider as a recommendation going forward. And thank you, Fran, for all the work that you've done to sort of fine tune this for us so that we can take it into a kind of a bite-sized format. Would it be fair for this group to adopt those recommendations that Fran has made, albeit without the numbers attached to them, with the proviso that when we all come back together on Friday in the full body, you know, those provisos will be included in the recommendation that the subcommittee is making, in which case the subcommittee might be withdrawing its recommendation potentially to the larger group. Is that a good way to go forward on this? That in principle we're on board with the way Fran has prioritized. We do want to see more in terms of the numbers associated with them, but otherwise we're good with making this recommendation onto the full body. Is that a good way to frame it? Okay. I'm not seeing anyone vociferously objecting or waving at their camera saying stop. Okay. So if that's the case, I guess we should maybe formally do a quick vote and just make sure that we're all on the same page if no one else has any other objections or questions. I'll take the liberty of making the motion that we adopt the prioritize recommendations from CAPS, from the blueprint, And so that we can recommend this on to the full ACIR at our regular meeting on Friday, with the proviso that we want to also see the numbers associated with it. So all the, do I have a second on that?
So moved.
Maureen is a second. Great. Thank you. All those in favor? Okay. Great. And anyone opposed or abstaining? Okay, good. So
thank you so much. Thank you all. Thank you all for taking the interest in this. I have no idea how much it is appreciated. And just getting your perspective has been wonderful. And I will get you those numbers.
Great. Great.
Thank you.
It occurs to, and before you go, Fran, it just also occurs to me that perhaps, I'd be interested in folks' thoughts about this, perhaps by Friday we might have a draft of a letter to send to the governor on behalf of ACIR that, assuming the full body does recommend this, that would formally communicate to the governor what ACIR believes makes more sense than what maybe his budget proposal initially was calling for. That's a tricky document, you know, and it's a little bit, it would have to be done with some tact and care. But assuming that we can do that, maybe we can have that ready to go for Friday based upon what we talked about the last couple of meetings. All right. Okay. Great.
I'm sorry, Brandon. Who would draft that? Is that something you would draft?
I'm thinking maybe between. I probably would be the one to help draft. And if I could, I'll send around. I've got a busy week, but I'll try to send around a draft of that ahead of the meeting, so folks can pick that apart.
Are you able to send it via Google Drive so that it'll be easier to provide recommendations and edits?
I will check the official disseminator of official documents is Bruce Witchin. So I'll send it to Bruce and I'll ask him if he has that capability of doing a Google Docs thing. Otherwise, you know, the worst case scenario is you get a draft and come Friday prepared to cut and slash.
This is Eric, and I can assist Bruce with the Google Docs request. That shouldn't be a big deal.
Oh, okay, great. Thanks, Eric.
I think it'll just be easier as we're going through the conversation on Friday. We'll probably want to change some of the language based on the final numbers and feedback from the rest of the members, that it might be easier to get expedited out.
Good thought. Thanks, Deborah. As always, you have great recommendations.
Thank you.
For keeping us. I think it was your idea to actually have this second meeting, Deborah. So good.
Keep you on your toes.
Which has been very helpful. Yeah. So... good. Okay, great. Is there any other item for the group to take up today? If not,
hey, Brendan?
Yes, Rick.
Can I just say, sorry to keep coming back to the one issue, but even Friday's discussion could be benefited if there was some way to even ballpark get an idea of cost savings that could be achieved with regard to the CAPS recommendation on special ed. Honestly, so that we don't only have to talk about the revenue side.
Yeah.
Honestly, and also I do believe, as Fran said, it's an equity issue too, especially with regard to students of color. And that's a separate thing, but in terms of the kind of decision we need to make on Friday, even if it was an order of magnitude or ballpark idea of how cost savings might be achieved through the CAPS recommendations on.
Rick, that's a great idea. And in fact, you know, the RPIP proposal that we made that is now as part of the governor's package, legislative package, started with a conversation I had with the governor about not only cost savings, but equity. And that if we were able to do that RPIP proposal, we could help start breaking down barriers between towns, which has been one of the goals of regionalizing. So, you know, this fits perfectly into that messaging. And the governor was certainly receptive to that. And I think the governor's office generally is looking at that. So it's a great thought.
Thanks.
Okay. We'll try to incorporate that in language to the governor. Okay. Great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all.
Again. All right.
Yeah, appreciate it, Fran. Thanks for your work on this.
Thank you. Thank you, Brendan. Thank you all.
Okay. All right. We'll see you all on Friday.
All right. Bye-bye. Do you need me on Friday, Brendan? No. Probably not. You probably need to have your own discussion. I'll be on call. How's that?
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if you can do that.
Yeah, I will be on call. All right.
I wasn't hesitating because I was trying to think through how to tell you nicely no.
No. It's all right, Brendan. You don't have to be nice.
Okay.
It's all right. Take care. Bye.
Good. All right. Thanks. Bye.